We are Two Guys Gaming. Hello and welcome. As always, even though we are under the Two Generations Gaming banner, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noobs Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades for Two Generations Gaming, and in this series we are reading Ready Player One, the novel by Ernest Cline. In this episode, I'm going to recap chapters 7, 8, and 9, then I will give my reaction to those chapters. Before that, let me explain my extended absence. As I've mentioned a couple of times, both on the website and I think in this series, it's been extremely busy lately. We've had play, we've had soccer, we now have baseball to contend with, although soccer and play will be over soon enough. I'm back to updating the website on a more regular basis, and I am actually going to start recording the calendar videos again for the YouTube. So some things to look forward to over the next couple of weeks. Chapter 7. When we last left Wade, he nearly reached an epiphany regarding the copper key in the egg hunt. Sitting in Latin class, his teacher conjugates verbs, because that's what language teachers do. They probably do that shit for fun. Relax, y'all. Some of my best friends are language teachers. All of this triggers a memory of Schoolhouse Rock as she gets to desere, to learn. I remember sitting in on a Latin class. When I taught in Athol, there was a Latin class, and I sat in on the class because the teacher and I were good friends, and he let me just sit on the class. And I remember telling him at the time, I think he was conjugating verbs or something like that, and I said, there's a reason this language is dead, because it's just simply ridiculous. And we have some birds in the background, so hopefully you enjoy their singing while we're talking. So the verb desere, to learn, leads to the limerick, because sometimes brains work in a weird way. Much to learn. Much to learn, much to learn, much to learn. Who has much to learn? Students. When they are literally on a planet filled with schools. Ludus. Add in the coincidence that the Latin for school, ludus, can also mean sport, quote-unquote, or game, quote-unquote. Isn't it ironic? Actually, no. Like the song, parenthetically, which in a striking coincidence may actually be ironic, I'm sure we all expected that the tomb, and ultimately the key, resides on the planet that our intrepid hero farted around for over 5 years. Then, suddenly a series of happenstance leads him right to that fact. He toys with other possibilities, but can't get over the fact that it just makes sense. He goes back to the module and the description of the location of the tomb. While coming to the conclusion, he twice triggers the school warning system. Once, he falls out of his chair, and the second time he swears when the software won't allow him to access the map of the planet during class. Time's burning. 17 minutes until the end of the school day. While waiting those excruciating minutes, he comes to another conclusion. Halliday wanted a school kid to have the upper hand in finding the first key. After the bell rang and everyone dispersed, he pulls up the map. A planet, 1,000 kilometers circumference, only one continent, no oceans, only lakes and ponds throughout the continent. Perpetually daylight there. He snapped the picture of the tomb, downloaded some image recognition / searching software, and set it to look for the tomb on the planet. After about 10 minutes, the software pings a possible result. He checks, and everything matches. He lets out a scream, both in real life and in the Oasis. He found it. Now the tricky part. How'd he get there? Now 400 kilometers away, almost literally the entire planet, and a maximum speed of 5 kilometers an hour, puts the trip at 80 hours on foot. A teleportation trip, nearly instant, parenthetically, with travel to the teleporter, and then from the teleporter to the dungeon, would cost a couple hundred credits he doesn't have. He could borrow the money from H, but A, rugged individualism, B, possible inquiry and suspicion. But thinking about H gives him another idea. The tomb, close to H's school, meant that he could travel on his school's budget. They pay for kids to travel to other schools for sports competition. He swaps supplies, walks to the teleporters, teleports, and makes his way to the tomb. Along the way, he equips his armor and sword, takes a vid mail from H, and refreshes himself on the tomb module. Most things don't worry him, because he has the map with all possible dangers, But the end encounter is with one of D&D's big bads, a lich. If you've seen Stranger Things, Vecna is a lich, to give you an idea. If he fights the thing in combat, forget it. Toast. Nevertheless, he pushes on through the forest. He arrives, digs through the dirt to expose the entrance. After some quick prep, he enters the dungeon. Luckily, like literally, I don't plan this other than, okay, next three chapters. We don't have to wait almost a week to resolve this mini cliffhanger. Chapter 8. Once in the tomb, he takes his time in order to avoid any possible surprises put there by Halliday in an attempt to throw people for a loop. He figures that Acerorak, the lich, guards the key. Even so, he explores each room to search for treasure. He finds 20,000 credits worth of gold coins and some magic items. At last, he arrives in the throne room. As with the rest of the tomb, it matches the module exactly, except for one major detail. Instead of being empty, the lich sits on the throne. He considers running, but already came this far. If the lich kills him, he can just re-roll and try again. Before the encounter, he tries to record for a chance to find any weaknesses, but the simulation prevents it. The lich demands to know his intentions. After some back and forth, the lich reveals the challenge. They will joust on birds. Yeah. If Wade wins, he gets the key. If not, he most likely dies. An old-style arcade machine appears. They play best two or three. Acerorak wins the first as Wade gets used to the game and controls again. He has to switch sides since he's more comfortable there. Those of us oldbies who played in the arcade know. He uses this advantage to win the second game. It all comes down to number three. The game goes longer than the other two combined. However, having blowed his wad already, the author presents the third game in such a way that comes off as a bit anticlimactic. That minor quibble aside, the lich congratulates him on his victory, morphs to Anorak, and offers the copper key. The XP gain brings him to 10th level. As he examines the key, he sees some text, another clue. What you seek lies hidden in the trash on the deepest levels of Daggeroth. He immediately deduces that trash refers to the TRS-80 computer system. Halliday, as we know, owned a TRS-80. He coded a small planet based on his hometown, complete with a digital recreation of his childhood home. Inside that home, inside his bedroom, that very TRS-80. Daggeroth, 1G, from Tolkien's Elvish, means quote-unquote battle. Daggeroth, 2Gs, presumably refers to an old computer game, especially when you consider that game exists in the room, in the house, on the planet, coded to be the same as Halliday's hometown. Oh yeah, he says that game made him want to be a programmer. Away we go. Or do we? He needs sleep. But how can he sleep now? Okay, let's go. Wait, what's that? A silhouette blocking the exit. He pockets the key, grabs his sword, and then the avatar speaks. Again, because strictly of happenstance and coincidence, you don't have to wait but a few moments to find out who it is. If you don't already know. Chapter 9. An angry demand to identify himself from a young woman's voice. Guess who? Yep, our girl Artemis has entered the chat. He describes her avatar, parenthetically. Okay, I see some of the male gaze. More on that later. As she approaches to get a better idea of who he is. They exchange pleasantries and not so pleasantries. He lies about who he is, and then lies again about beating the lich in combat. Still on guard, she tells him to relax. They test the zone for PvP and find that they can't fight each other. He lies again and tries to get away after she asks him to stay, and they'll take turns to try to beat the lich. His fanboy wins and he stays. She apologizes. They exchange more pleasantries. She reveals that she tried and tried and failed for 3 weeks. They exchange even more pleasantries. He falls more smitten for her. Their conversation falls into that comfortable but awkward geek banter. She finally introduces herself. He reveals his fandom, then proves himself by pulling some random mention on her blog. They exchange contact cards. Hers looks like an old Star Wars action figure. His mimics an Atari Adventure 2600 cartridge. He again tries to get away. She offers him a healing spell and sends him on his way. He nearly makes it out before she finds the truth. During a cursory search while preparing for the lich, she finds his name on the scoreboard. He confirms by finding headlines galore announcing his success. She blocks his exit with a barrier spell, This leads to a conversation about what they'd do with the money if they won. He plans to GTFO and build a space station for him and his friends to explore. Of course, he never considered the specifics of this plan, but it sounds cool. So he feels awfully ridiculous, parenthetically, or should, when Artemis gives her plan. She prefaces her idea with the fact that the world is shit. This only reinforces his resolve to build the spaceship in GTFO. Then, she hits him with her idea. She wants to use the money for good. Try to help the world and the people in it that are hurting. He writes this plan off as ridiculous. Let that sink in. The chapter ends with Artemis ready to square off against the boss, and Wade leaving to search after the next clue. And now, for my reaction. I'm in a weird place with this book. Something like the first key, residing on the very planet where Wade spent most of his time and energy, should annoy me. Instead, I find it endearing. So I'm either getting soft in my old age, parenthetically, I am, or I give this book a pass because of the subject matter, parenthetically, I am. The difference is that ultimately, I don't care. I want to enjoy this book and have fun. I wanted to like the Dragonlance book. I really did. As you age, you change. One of the realizations I came to a few years ago, you don't get a medal for being the biggest grump in the world. It only makes you, and you alone, miserable. Plus, your energy multiplies. Good brings good, and bad brings bad. So no matter the reasons, I enjoy this book, and until something egregious happens, I intend to continue to enjoy it. On that note, I told you from the beginning that the backlash initially surprised and worried me, but I came in with an open mind. I'm glad I did, because Klein told an enjoyable story so far. Silly popcorn stuff, but not everything needs to be fine art. Sometimes you just want to be entertained. Well, I find this book ceaselessly entertaining right now. Is it without flaws? No, of course not. I see what people meant when they wrote about the quote-unquote male gaze as a point of criticism. We saw several times when Wade talked about crushing on Artemis or how hot he considered some traitor action. So, yes, I get it. And I don't mean to downplay the severity of toxic masculinity and the reduction of women to sexual objects. That remains a very real thing, and we must fight against it. With all of that being said, having been a teenage boy before, they can be pigs. I'm not excusing the behavior, I'm simply offering it as an explanation. You might argue that teenage boys needn't be like that. Fair enough. I agree. My wife and I both discuss sex in an honest way with all three of our boys. We continue to discuss sex and sexuality with them. But simply acknowledging that something exists is not an explicit endorsement of that thing. Also, just because a man considers the sex and sexuality of a partner, that doesn't automatically mean that's all he considers about that partner. Wade also defers to Artemis and her feelings during the conversation. He admits to being a big fan, admiring her wit and intelligence. So yes, icky, but redeemable in my opinion. If any of this makes me a bad ally, parenthetically, and I know for some it will, then I have more work to do. All of that being said, I still enjoy the book. Again, I get it. Klein tapped into that subset of nerd and got his hooks into us. A tomb of horrors that leads to a bass bottle via the old 2600 game Joust. This book is written by 11-year-old me, fueled by too many handy snacks and little hugs. I mean, as soon as he mentioned jousting, my brain went there. Then he said birds, and I may have said it out loud. Are you fucking kidding me? One of my favorite games on the Atari 2600 and 7800 was Joust. The only way he could have made this more on the nose is by making the game Frostbite or Pitfall. Who knows? Those games probably play a pivotal role later in the book. As discussed before, I think, I never owned a TRS-80. When Klein talked about the C-64 a couple chapters ago, I had that one. Also, my middle school had some TI-99s in the computer lab with an Apple IIe as the teacher computer. We also used the 2E as a treat a couple of times. As an aside, I planned to program a game on my Commodore 64 with a friend. Another friend told us we were crazy and we'd never get it done. Some friend, huh? Well, we went on its dark, gregarious games, and I'm here to announce the Ontologically Anthropocentric Sensory Immersive Simulator, parenthetically, OASIS for short. Nah, actually he was right, and we barely got past the planning stage, and only coded part of the background for the first level. But I recently rediscovered a love for programming, so who's laughing now? Okay. back to business. Any fear I had of two-dimensional characters fizzled during the interaction with Artemis. He fleshed her out more and gave way to worthy frenemy to both push him to do better and also probably save his ass sometime in the future. Can we talk a little bit about the what you do with the money conversation? I obviously included that to come back and talk about it here. Sure, it's an important plot point, but I also have an axe to grind a bit here. I want to build a giant spaceship and travel to other solar systems, but damn girl, you've got your head in the clouds thinking that the money will make poor people not poor. What I mean by that is, fuck Elon Musk and all of our billionaire overlords. People hoard newspapers and magazines, and they make a show ridiculing them. People hoard money while half the population starves, and we put them on those magazines and papers. Straight up, screw that entire mess. I know, shut up, bleeding heart, hippie, communist cuck. Keep hurling your quote-unquote insults. Your contempt only makes me stronger. And on that note, thanks for listening. If you can stomach my quote-unquote lefty loony point of view, and you haven't already, come find us at www.twoguysgaming.net. I know I call us Two Generations Gaming now, mostly because I more than Chris am involved in the project, and I was hoping that my kids would get more involved, but they haven't. So at this point, it's really just me doing it, but I mentioned my kids and I mentioned Chris, so we're two guys gaming, we're two generations gaming, even though it's really just me who writes the articles and that sort of thing. We have articles there, as I mentioned. I'm getting back into it. This week, I'm doing some comic reviews from April 2023. We have a link to our socials, including our YouTube, which has not been updated in quite a while. But again, I just said that I'm going to record a video of the calendar to start getting caught up on that so that we can be back on schedule for that. If you're reading along, let me know. If you'd like to read along, you can grab a copy of the book and let me know what you think about it. I'm always interested in hearing what other people think and having conversations and discussions and that sort of thing. So by all means, I will be back on Thursday. I have three episodes planned for this week. This one today, one on Thursday, and one on Sunday. I'm going to try to do three chapters per episode to stay on the schedule that I put together earlier and then got off of when everything got busy to be finished up by the time that we go to Germany. I will be back on Thursday. Talk to you then. Bye, guys.
We are